Chapter 70, El Mensaje. Whatever was coming, Nix deserved it. Max set his rifle case on the counter and unzipped it. Nix tried to swallow, but her mouth had gone dry. Maybe it wouldn't hurt to soften him up a bit before confessing her crimes. "Welcome home, Daddy," she said in a tone she'd heard Sarah use with Mr. Hainsworth. "I've got something amazing to tell you." Nix paused, a little distracted at the face her father was making. Far from angry, he actually seemed scared. No, horrified. But at least he'd not opened the gun case.
"Well, I used to think I didn't have any particular talents," Nix continued. "But today, without warning, Mr. Wack dove across the room and launched himself out the apartment door, as if he'd spotted a particularly plump rabbit running down the hallway." Nix and her mother exchanged startled looks and peered out the door. He was gone, and he'd left his most prized possession on the kitchen counter. For 10 minutes, they waited in silence. Then Mrs. Wack put the gun in a cupboard and retreated to her room. Nix felt a deep emptiness, not being able to share her accomplishments with her family. After a short internal debate, she approached her mother's door. "Good night, Mom," she said into the crack. "Oh, I was going to tell you and Dad. They have me playing the lead in the school musical now. I get my own solo and everything."
The only sound came from the refrigerator as it hummed in the kitchen. Well, what did she expect? Her mother to start applauding?
"The show goes every night this week," Nix reminded her. "Parents of cast get in free."
The refrigerator sounded pretty enthusiastic about the idea. Nix knew it was time to get to bed. She changed into her pajamas and fell asleep learning the new words to her solo, all the while missing Toadstool's warmth at her feet. What seemed like seconds after she'd closed her eyes, a scratching noise roused her. A pale winter morning shone through the crack in the blinds. She pulled them open and fell back onto the bed. Two enormous opossums sat outside on the sill, staring through the window at her. The bigger one held a little rat or bunny skull in its paw, as if waiting for the right moment to present it to Nix. Yeah, not going to happen. She felt a slight pull toward them and knew they could only be the ones who'd saved her from Demon Andy. They were like her little fairy companions.
"My own little flora and fauna."
Weren't opossums supposed to hibernate or something? They looked cold, but there was no way Nix was letting two enormous wild animals into her bedroom. But she didn't want them to starve either. She found a box of stale breakfast cereal in a back cupboard and dumped it out on the window, being careful not to let the beasts weasel their way inside. They seemed happy enough, which assuaged her guilt somewhat. Maybe she could find them a cardboard box and put a blanket in it or something.
"If you guys are still around next Halloween, you're both getting tutus and fairy wings."
Nix noticed the ground was still brown outside. The yellowed weeds shook in a stiff breeze, but the sky remained cloudless. When was it going to snow? Only a few weeks until Christmas, and so far the only precipitation had been icy rain. Nix liked the snow for a lot of reasons, but mostly because it buried junky yards and transformed the trailer park into a respectable-looking winter village. Not that she missed living there. Staying at the Cherries had been the closest thing to having a real home. The thought filled her with guilt and profound sadness, especially since that line of thought inevitably led to rotting corpses and demons in attics.
"Go find a warm place," Nix said to the rodents before closing the blinds again.
When she went out to get breakfast, she found Mrs. Wack sitting at the kitchen table, eyes red-rimmed and swollen. She looked as if she hadn't slept at all.
"Did Dad come back?" Nix asked.
Mrs. Wack stared out the window. Nix made hash browns, leaving some in the pan in case her mother hadn't eaten. Halfway to school, Nix was wishing she'd eaten more. The cold sapped her energy. She was tempted to eat a piece of jerky from her bag, but Jordan had bought that specifically for her posthumous recovery.
"Hey, weren't you in that play thingy?"
A pair of senior girls hopped over the aisle into the seat in front of Nix.
"Oh, you guys saw it?" Nix asked, a little thrown off.
Normally when kids talked to her on the bus, it was to shout rude things about her weight.
"No, but her friend Angela did. She said the Dumbo girl took over for Fawn DeShay and blew her out of the water."
Nix smiled, feeling even more uncomfortable.
"That was nice. Tell her thanks."
"I'll tell her tomorrow," one of the girls said. "She's at her grandma's funeral."
Sad. What was sad was Nix's social skills. Maybe before Sarah left for Europe, she could give Nix some pointers on how not to act like a fool in public. When Nix stepped off the bus,
She was surprised to find a group of cast members waiting for her on the snow-free sidewalk. Jordan greeted her and explained it was for the safety of all involved that the cast and crew decided to stick together between classes. It seemed Fawn had not taken the news of her replacement well. "What can she expect?" Nick said, feeling a little claustrophobic with people surrounding her on all sides. "She left."
"Apparently she's been making threats to get even with you," Sarah said with a grin, as if this were the funniest thing she'd heard in a while.
Nix wasn't nearly as amused.
"Get even? Like, how?"
Tiago and Jordan laughed. Nix found herself involuntarily gravitating to the crisp smell of deodorant with a hint of fabric softener.
"Relax, Nix," Jordan said. "You could snap her arms like toothpicks. It's her that should be, uh-oh."
An orange sports car pulled into the parking lot. The driver removed his sunglasses, and Nix nearly swallowed her tongue. Brian.
"What the actual fetch?" Jordan said.
Tiago said something in Spanish. Nix was pretty sure it was the same thing Leo had said on Halloween. Brian seemed to notice the familiar faces and waved in a mocking, coquettish fashion.
"That piece of..."
"Wait," Nix said. "What is Fawn doing?"
"I think she's gesturing for you to come over."
"No way."
"She's puffing out her cheeks. I think that's her way of specifying who she wants to talk to."
"That girl just doesn't know when to quit,"
Tiago said. Nix broke off from the group and strode toward the car. Before Jordan followed, he directed the group of cast members to wait on the sidewalk and to be ready to jump in if things got ugly. Fawn sat in the passenger seat with her shades on. Nix approached Fawn's window, but kept outside of clawing range.
"What do you want?"
"To give you a warning," Nix pointed at Brian.
"Seriously? You're friends with this guy again? Even after he totally set you up?"
Fawn laughed.
"He was just being Brian. Not that it's any of your business."
Jordan crutched around to Brian's side and scowled as if attempting to intimidate the guy who was twice his size.
"He framed you," Nix said. "He's a pathological liar. I thought you had more self-respect than that. And anyway, aren't you supposed to be in the group home?"
Fawn glanced around to see who might have heard, then leaned out the window.
"Shut your fat mouth. You don't know what you're even talking about."
"Did you escape?" Nix asked. "Did you run off with Brian? I'm sure if I called—"
"Brian is my boyfriend,"
Fawn said.
"He has been since Halloween, just because you guys were too stupid to notice."
"So this little number belongs to you?"
Jordan said, undressing the car with his eyes.
"Where did you get it?"
He had apparently forgotten about acting tough.
"The dealership in Delaware,"
Brian said.
"It's a Miata."
Jordan reached to examine the side mirror, then seemed to think better of it.
"Nice. Avoid that sales tax. Custom paint job."
Nix tried not to listen to the ridiculous conversation. Boys were so dumb. Didn't they know how to be proper enemies? The growl sounded. Most of the cast members wandered off to class, but a few of them, including Sarah, stayed to watch the altercation. She looked like she was debating whether to join Nix. Fawn patted Brian's leg and smirked, as if that was supposed to make Nix jealous. He's way too old to be dating a high school student.
"He's an actor," Fawn said, "and he takes it very seriously. What you call lying is him playing a role, practicing. He's going to be in a film this summer."
"What happened to you, Fawn?" Nix asked softly. "For a few weeks there, you almost seemed like a real sister."
She'd been about to say human being, but figured that wasn't very nice.
"We weren't friends, if that's what you think. I was using you for acting practice. Brian's going to get me a part in the film, too."
Nix shook her head. She felt sorry for Fawn more than anything. The girl was clearly lost, and Brian was not a good influence on her. A thought occurred to Nix.
"Fawn, he's not hurting you, is he? Or making you do anything you don't?"
Fawn laughed in her face.
"As if he could. I gave him a black eye a couple months ago."
Nix's stomach dropped a few inches. If Fawn had hit Brian, what had he done to deserve it? Nix really wanted to call Vivek, but she needed more information.
"Who were those other kids with you on Halloween? Were they from your new place?"
Fawn grinned as if she'd been waiting to divulge this very information.
"Let's see, Brian's brother, also the starting quarterback for Hawnee High, and a few of the other players."
"Where are you staying? If you really did run away, Brian could get arrested."
Fawn motioned Nix forward. As soon as she got close enough, Fawn grabbed Nix by her one remaining ear.
"If you say a word to anyone, you'll be sorry."
"Hey, let go of her!"
Jordan waved a crutch menacingly. Nix was too surprised to react.
"Cancel the show," Fawn said.
That's all I came here to say. If you try to play Dorothy again, I'll...
Brian swore.
Pigs.
Fawn released her grip. Nix was ready to lecture him on treating girls with respect, but realized he was referring to the police car that had just pulled in. Brian started the car and rolled casually back onto the street.
Fawn's not coming to school? Jordan asked.
Nix sighed. She ran away from her group home. Officer Tiamsland greeted Jordan enthusiastically as Bullseye. Nix and Jordan pointed at the retreating orange car and explained the Fawn and Brian situation. The youngish red-bearded officer promised to contact DHS and the police chief. Another cruiser pulled up. Apparently a freshman's parents had complained about Principal Weatherwax's extended hugs, and the officers had come to arrest him. Despite Nix's protestations that he was just a harmless old man, the parents were, according to Tiamsland, planning a protest at the school if the matter wasn't dealt with. Well, if Weatherwax was really possessed, maybe one of the cops would pick up on it. Nix and Jordan arrived nearly 20 minutes late to first period. He pointed to his crutches. It was all Nix could do to keep a straight face. Ms. Winkle gave them the evil eye while they took their seats, but then continued to write review questions on the board. While Danny read from a textbook, Jordan filled Tiago in about Fawn.
She's 80 pounds soaking wet, Tiago said. What's the worst she could do to Nix? Scratch out eyes with fake nails, Jordan said. Bite off fingers. I'm telling you, the chick's dangerous.
I think she's planning something, Nix whispered. I mean, besides sicking her new football friends on me.
Let her plan all she wants, Tiago said. The fact is, you've got her part, and she's out on her rump.
Nix pulled a script out of her bag and slid it onto Jordan's desk.
What's this for? Jordan asked.
Memorize it, she said. So tomorrow when they find me dead, you can take over as Dorothy.
I'm not sure my dad would like that. I got an official mandate last night that I'm not allowed to be a hairdresser when I grow up.
Jordan Frost, Ms. Winkle called. I'll dismiss class 10 minutes early if you can tell me what Ms. Parker just said.
Tiago and Nix instantly straightened and faced forward. Jordan lifted one finger.
It wouldn't have anything to do with extra credit, would it?
Close, Ms. Winkle said. Polly said she couldn't hear because of a loud conversation going on in the back row.
Jordan grinned sheepishly.
Can we get out 5 minutes early if I guess what the loud conversation was about?
Ms. Winkle laughed, and several students joined her. Even Polly was grinning before they finally resumed the lesson. Despite the evil brunette's prediction that Nix would be sorry, the second night's show was a smashing success. Much to the relief of the participants, Fawn wasn't even seen at the performance. The cast found it much easier to remember lines when Dorothy stuck to the script, and the applause for Nix's solo went on for several minutes before Mrs. Finkbone came out to hush the crowd. Every moment on stage, Nix felt as if she were floating outside her body again. Of course, it helped her confidence quite a bit that Tiago had found his older sister's maternity wetsuit for her to use. Although Nix had to roll up the arms and legs, it was much better at hiding unsightly bulges than silver spandex. At the final curtain, when the house lights came on, Nix spotted Mr. Hainsworth, as well as Love Zerby, and what looked like the entire Padilla family. To Nix's relief, the strange, big-eyebrowed man wasn't seen the second night. Even so, she made a point to escort Sarah to her father's car.
Thanks for everything, Sarah said before she got in. I know I said I didn't need a bodyguard, but I'm really lucky to have a friend that cares enough to protect me from stalkers.
Nix gave an awkward chuckle.
You better not learn Spanish while you're in Europe, or Jordan and I will be forced to learn it too, so we can understand all your private conversations with Tiago.
I'll do my best not to pick up the language. Oh, by the way, Nix said, I've been thinking. I really feel like Quincy is safe out there somewhere, and I think he'll be back. Maybe sooner than you think. That's really...
Will you just get in, Sarah? I've got a lot of calls to make tonight.
Sorry, Daddy.
Sarah got into the car. Nix peered through the window to wave to Mr. Hainsworth. Up close, he looked like he could be Brad Pitt's stunt double. He didn't return the wave or even wait for Nix to step away from the car before driving off. Wow, what a jerk. At least it made her feel better about her own lame father. On Wednesday morning, an article appeared in the Crier calling the high school's production a refreshing surprise. The editor who had attended the second night proclaimed the script original and the talent abundant, noting specifically the unusual but spectacular choice for the lead female. That night, they doubled ticket sales. Mrs. Finkbone got really weird and began sending students around to run errands that had already been done, and issuing mild threats about the quality of the performance. Despite the director's worries, the third show was the best so far. Nix spotted Felix from the taco stand. as well as Mike Crotty with an arm around a stunning black woman. Even Mr. Dibble showed up and seemed to enjoy himself. Still, no Fawn. Nix was beginning to think the dropout fugitive had gotten cold feet. On Thursday morning, Nix entered the dining room to find her mother cutting up coupons.
"Do you still hide out at the graveyard?"
she asked from under orange-painted eyebrows. Where had that come from?
"I never hid out. That was just my place to think."
And morbidly experienced strangers sorrow vicariously. Nix grabbed a granola bar from the cupboard.
"But no, I haven't been there for a while."
"Good. Stay away from there."
She took a sip of her coffee and resumed snipping. A page next to her showed the name and address of someone in a different apartment. Still stealing papers. Then Nix saw the front page headline and nearly choked on her breakfast. Missing WCHS teacher found dead. The body of a Woods Cross High chemistry teacher was found in a cemetery on Wednesday morning. An anonymous witness discovered 42-year-old Owen Urbanek dead in an on-site groundskeeping shed and immediately called 911. Urbanek appeared to have been brutally murdered via blunt force head trauma and later hung from the inside wall by gopher traps. Urbanek's mother was brought in from the Dominican Republic to identify the remains.
"He'd been rotting a few days at least," says Michael Crotty, a local police officer. "Animals had gotten to him and made quite a mess."
Law enforcement found personal items and food containers in a nearby open grave, leading them to believe Urbanek had been living in the cemetery for at least a week with only a plywood slab for shelter. Police say more details will be released as they become available. They are still investigating why Urbanek had fled his home and how he received the injuries that killed him. Anyone who may have seen or heard anything in the days leading up to the discovery or has information about this homicide is asked to contact Sergeant B. Frost of WCPD.
"Did you see this?" Nix asked. "Was it Mrs. Zerby who found the body?
Had the demons taken Urbanek out too? He was clearly scared of something if he'd been hiding out."
"Stay away from the graveyard," Mrs. Wax said again.
She seemed totally unconcerned that one of Nix's teachers had been murdered and eaten by wild animals. At school, the student body and faculty spoke of nothing else. Jordan speculated that Eric Patterson might have suspected Urbanek of turning him in. But Nix pointed out that the boy was scared of ghosts and probably didn't have any assassins in his employ. She thought it more likely that the Cherries, Gary, and Urbanek had all been killed by a demon-controlled Sandy Abendroth. Once the shock had worn off, Nix had to ask herself how she felt about Urbanek's death. For some reason, Nix felt partially responsible. It didn't make any sense, but she couldn't help feeling if she'd gone about things in a different way, maybe Urbanek would still be alive. The more important question to be answered was who was next. Although there was talk of canceling Wizard of Oi that night, the show was completely sold out and the administration didn't fancy losing all that revenue. The performance went smoothly, except for several piranhas missing their cue. Nix was very disappointed in Tiago, who'd been giving Sarah a back massage. After the last curtain call, Mrs. Finkbone made a tasteful dedication to Mr. Urbanek's memory. On the day of the final show, Nix's opossum friends woke her. It sounded like they were clacking their teeth together or snapping their jaws shut. She figured they were hungry since the cereal had been devoured. The problem was that one of the fat things wouldn't get off the windowsill, and Nix wasn't about to open the window for it to jump in and attack her. She spent a half hour trying to scare it off the ledge so she could dump the cereal outside. In the end, she had to open the window a crack and push the fruit rings through one at a time. It was actually kind of adorable, but by the time she'd finished, she had already missed the bus. She called the Frosts in case they hadn't left yet, but no one answered. She bundled up extra warm and set off for school at a swift amble. She hadn't gone very far when she heard someone sneeze behind her. She turned to find both enormous opossums waddling after her. She sped up.
"Go away! Go eat your breakfast!"
They sped up. Nix began to jog.
"Leave me alone! I'm not interested in smelling like garbage for school!"
Eventually, Nix grew winded and decided she'd rather be eaten by marsupials than continue torturing her body, so she slowed to a walk. The opossums came up and trotted on either side of her like furry bodyguards. Nix smiled. "I suppose you can..." Then they started hissing. Nix was preparing to kick her way free when she realized they were hissing at something emerging from the trees nearby. The mutt with the shoe in its mouth. But as it got closer, Nix realized it wasn't her white shoe, but a black sneaker with something sticking out of it. Nix calmed the opossums, then beckoned the dog closer. He crept closer, wary of the beasts twice his size.
"They won't hurt you."
Hopefully. The shoe, it turned out, had been tied around the dog's neck. What kind of sick jerk would do such a thing? at least without some kind of serious life-or-death reason. Nix untied the shoe. It was a lot easier than hers had been, since it looked like it hadn't had time to get tight and knotted. She pulled a paper out of the sneaker, a note written in another language. As far as she could tell, it was Spanish or maybe Italian. A thrill coursed through her. Someone had used the dog like a message in a bottle. Except, unlike her, they actually had a pen and paper on hand. The page looked like it had been torn out of a fertilizer spreader user manual. The shoe itself was remarkably clean, all things considered, so she slid it into her backpack with the note she would ask Tiago to translate. But Tiago spent the entire day in detention for accidentally scratching McGuckin's car with his backpack strap. It was rumored that Polly had witnessed the incident and gone straight to the office to report it. Afterward, Jordan wanted to steal Polly's purse and poop in it, but Nix convinced him that it was in poor taste, and also that he shouldn't do anything that might jeopardize the final performance. Jordan tried to translate the note and decided it was a love letter intended for Tiago himself. After that, Nix lost a little enthusiasm about handing it over to him. That night, as she watched for Tiago through the curtain, Nix felt a familiar wave of unease wash over her. She couldn't decide if she was worried about what Fawn might be planning, or just nervous because the theater was jam-packed with people. It certainly didn't help that the entire Cross High football team took up the first two rows. Every seat was occupied, and it was still a half hour before curtain up. Now parents, students, and the general public were finding room wherever they could, lining the back walls and sitting on the stairs. It was a good thing Sergeant Frost wasn't there to see all the fire code flaunting. The other piranhas were already in costume and practicing their choreography when Tiago arrived.
"You gonna show him the note?" Jordan asked.
"I go on in 5 minutes," Nix said as someone pasted her hair alongside her face to cover her missing ear. "I'll ask him at intermission." When the opening piano introduction started, Nix forgot all about the dog and shoe. Something was wrong. Beryl was missing notes. Had she come to school drunk or something? Nix stepped down from the stage and rushed to the piano. "Are you okay?"
"Something's wrong with a bunch of the keys," Beryl whispered, trying to keep playing. "They won't go down."
"It has to be Fawn," Nix said. "She did something to the piano." Beryl turned a page of music.
"Open the top, see if something's stuck in the action."
Nix had no idea what Beryl was talking about, but she quickly figured out how to open the top. She swiveled the tiny piano light to shine down inside. Wow, she'd never seen the guts of a piano before, especially not while it was being played. It looked like some kind of complicated loom.
"See anything?" Beryl asked. "I need my light back."
Sure enough, Nix caught sight of something white wedged into the inner workings of the piano. Several of them. Careful to avoid the little hammers striking the strings, Nix reached in and plucked one out. It was a rolled-up sock.
"Hurry!"
Nix realized Beryl's introduction was nearly over, and Dorothy was supposed to be on stage when the curtain opened. By that time, Mrs. Finkbone had crept to their side to see what was the matter. Nix shoved the sock into the director's hands. "Fawn left us a present," she said, and strode toward the stage. "Three more are still in there." Mrs. Finkbone worked fast. By the time the curtain opened, Beryl was playing normally again. Nix barely had enough breath to say her first line. When the first scene ended, Nix rushed over to find Beryl and the director backstage, struggling to set up a synthesizer.
"They couldn't get one of the socks out," Lollipop Plankton said. "Good thing Mrs. Finkbone had a keyboard in her classroom."
"Will you be okay on this?" Nix whispered to Beryl. Beryl shrugged. At the start, there was a little trouble with the volume, but once Beryl found her groove, the keyboard actually lent a more professional feel to the whole production. Especially when Beryl found a dreamlike setting that transformed the ambiance on stage. Nix grinned to think that Fawn's weak sabotage was actually improving the musical. When it came time for Nix's solo, she prayed that the keyboard wouldn't burst into flames or something. She stepped to center stage, and time seemed to stop in the packed auditorium. The introduction started, and Nix sang.
Once on a TV show, somewhere under the ocean, sand is gold.
one might not feel the cold. Someday I'll dive beneath the waves, explore the reef and coral caves with slow toe. Although he's just a silly snail, it's kind of fun to watch him trail his slime as we go. Somewhere under the ocean, way down low, where I'll have new adventures, just like the cable show. Why cheesy actors long ago got paid to sing, I guess I'll never know.
Before the last note had trailed off, the applause started. People stood, and not one at a time. It was as if the entire audience rose as one. Nyx's eyes filled with tears. She suspected this would be the best moment of her life. At least, until Tiago proposed. When the audience reluctantly stopped screaming for an encore, the cast was able to start the whirlpool scene. Half the cast seemed to touch Nyx as they came on stage, as if to congratulate her on raising the energy of the crowd to rockstar concert level. Back to work, Nyx reminded herself. They still had most of the musical to go. Although the first disaster had been averted, Nyx warned the cast to stay vigilant. There was no way a half-hearted attempt to botch the accompaniment was all Fawn had planned. After the first act, Mrs. Finkbone reminded the cast and crew to keep their eyes open for any more pranks and to immediately question anyone who wasn't supposed to be backstage. Still, Nyx couldn't shake the feeling that the power would suddenly turn off during the last act, or Fawn would show up in a wetsuit that actually fit and begin delivering Dorothy's lines. Remarkably, all the lights stayed firmly bolted to the ceiling, and after several more smooth scenes, Nyx began to forget about the piano fiasco. This was life to her. Singing full voice, prancing around stage, hundreds of people staring at her, not because she was fat, but because she'd actually found something she was good at. Halfway through the second act, Nyx had forgotten all about the socks. There hadn't been any more hang-ups, and performing in front of a responsive crowd distracted her nicely. The audience laughed at jokes no one had laughed at before, and after every scene, their thunderous applause echoed off the walls. The only thing that would have made the night more perfect was not having to worry a row of lights might drop down on her at any moment. During intermission, Nyx cornered Tiago and handed him the note. "Is this Spanish?" she asked. "It's not for me, obviously. I found it."
"What does it say?" asked Jordan.
"It's Spanish," Tiago said, "but really poor grammar. Probably someone's homework," or he trailed off.
"What?"
Jordan said. "Is this for real?" he asked, his eyes boring into Nyx's.
"Is what for real?"
Jordan asked loud enough for other cast members to shush him. Tiago began to translate.
"If you find this, please give it to someone at the Cross Crier. This is intended to be printed in..."
"Jordan!" Mrs. Finkbone called. "Get over here!"
Jordan's head came up like a prairie dog.
"Did you leave your costume on the floor?"
Mrs. Finkbone practically shouted.
"Someone just tripped over it and broke off half the spines. You've got 10 minutes to make it presentable or you'll be going out in your underwear."
Jordan swore and ran off.
"Keep going,"
Nyx said to Tiago.
"This is intended to be printed in the Crier as a letter to Argus. Dear Argus, you seem to know so much about our town. Did you know we have demon problems? Did you know they are taking advantage of citizens down on their luck? Average people trying to make a buck to pay for substances we need to stay sane? I and at least a few others answered an ad in the Crier a few months ago. One-time surveillance job. Only it turned out to be a break-in. A man who I now understand to be Alex Abendroth accompanied me to an upper's mansion in August. I believe Alex was looking for a way to find his family, but something else was inside Alex, and it was looking for something as well. A glowing rock. They seemed to think I would be the only one who could see the stone, and it was my job to scour the house until I found it.
but after I tripped over a dog, inadvertently breaking its neck, I lost my nerve and fled out the back, leaving Alex to search the house. He found me afterward and made it clear that he was not human, and unless I wanted to be eviscerated, I was now his slave. I know how this sounds. I didn't understand it at first either, but he made good on his threats. When I failed in my next assignment to recruit local criminals, he tried to burn down my house with me inside. He also threatened my mother, who lives out of the country. After that, I belonged to him completely. I broke into the same mansion again to look for the stone, only to fail again. Alex found others to complete his jobs, a male nurse, a few drug-addled teens, and I know there are more. When people began to die, I tried to go to the police. Officer Crotty ridiculed me. I returned home long enough to collect my things. I've been in hiding, sure I'm being hunted. That the demon knew my betrayal was never in question. Somehow he knows and sees everything. Yet I've managed to hide from him. It has been several days, and I know this can only end one way. I have written this note hoping to find some way to get it to the public. Even if it does come to light, I'm sure I will be long dead. Please tell Sarah Hainsworth I'm sorry for killing her dog, and tell my mother she was right about everything, and that I love her. I call to this town. Wake up. Look around you. Question everything and everyone. There are monsters among us, and they won't stop until they have enslaved every one of us. Farewell. Owen Guerrero, Urbanek.